on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
So then you go to Netzach, which is Venus, Lace of Venus, and the mystery there is, you know, it's incredibly erotic, attractive, obsessive, compulsive. You know, there's incredible desires involved in the XY, XX genes interacting with each other. But there's an inner side to all that, and that's the feeling of being one with another person. So if you can attain oneness with another, you feel that within yourself, you're in a different world. All your psychic makeup reorients and recalibrates. So, and then you go on to the others, which as you move upward, they become more general and universal. Mm. So you start out physical world survival, personality, and then into what really inspires you, how do you master yourself, what's your role in society, and then up into the higher, you know, kind of divine level states of awareness.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by author William Mistily to discuss his book, The Hermetic Tree of Life, Elemental Magic and Spiritual Initiation. William discusses the influence of Franz Bardon on his work, virtues and vices on the Tree of Life, working with elemental spirits, and how the final end of magic is the perfection of the imagination. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. William Mistily has been studying esoteric and magical traditions for more than 45 years, focusing in particular on the teachings of Czech magician Franz Bardon. He has studied with more than 50 masters from many traditions, including Tibetan Buddhist monks while living at a monastery. He joins me today to discuss his latest book, The Hermetic Tree of Life. William, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thank you.
Well, I really enjoyed The Hermetic Tree of Life, and I am looking forward to speaking to you about it. And I thought that maybe one of the first places to begin would be to ask you to discuss Franz Bardon a little bit, because if I'm not mistaken, he's a huge influence on your work in this book. So I was wondering if you could maybe speak a little bit about who he was and the relationship between his teachings and what you have done in the Hermetic Tree of Life.
Sure. Franz Bardon died in the 50s. His work in life was basically to publish three books that are training manuals. The story goes, the mythology of Franz Bardon, is that during World War I, kind of like Ukraine now, a lot of soldiers died in the trenches. And so once they were dead, they complained to the spiritual world, hey, you know, we didn't have any real spiritual teachings while we were alive. So we weren't able to make the most of our life. So 40 years later, soon after that, this Franz Bardon incarnated. And 40 years later, he came out with his book. So it took a 40-year period of time for, let's say, what's called divine providence to respond to those particular prayers. For some reason, they were responsive. His work, Bardon is extremely adept with the four elements. He can cause rain to start and stop. He can heal people with great ease. He can do all sorts of magical feats. But this wasn't easy for him. But he brought that with him into his life. It's very hard to teach that. But that's what he does try to teach in his first book, Initiation into Hermetics. He's trying to reveal the methods, let us say divine power, which have not been present in any previous tradition publicly. Now, some of the stuff he taught, he felt a conflict with, you know, this should never be shared publicly, because he'd lived many lifetimes where this stuff was all secret. He was sworn to all sorts of oaths, but he was ordered to say, reveal it, explain it in detail in ordinary language, how you can take an ordinary human being, train him over 40 or 50 years, and convert him under the best of conditions so that he's a spirit who, while still incarnated, who can help oversee human evolution. Human evolution needs a lot of assistance, And his book is intended to kind of fill in the gaps. So if you have a big complaint and you're highly dedicated and have the time and energy, you might turn to his books to help solve problems, which there are no other solutions to. For example, me, the United Nations, if it would do its job, you wouldn't need me publishing books. But the Security Council is not able to act on behalf of humanity. It still has members who are very much pursuing their own ends. So they're in deep conflicts with each other. So I have to kind of think, what would it take? I mean, this is me in my essence here. What would it take to eliminate wars on Earth? We have the spiritual technology to do this, but I have to reverse engineer it, figure out what would you need to do that, and then how on earth would you learn that so that it can be applied without all sorts of calamities occurring. Asimov, in his book trilogy, The Foundation, lays out the exact same problem. You know, you got regular people who are geniuses trying to run the world, and then you have spiritual people who he called them mentalists, but who are basically very psychic. But in both groups, there's this ego competition for power. I want attention. I want to make the decisions. And so he had a hard time resolving that. So that's something I have to work through too, that same issue that he dealt with. So that's my relationship to Byron. I've been practicing seeking spiritual traditions, many kinds, for 5 years. And then I came across these books and I said, oh my gosh, here's the core training I was begging the Tibetan lamas and the Taoists and everyone else to share with me. But it turns out everything he does doesn't work for me. I have to modify it, re-engineer it again, test it, experiment with it, because I understand his intention, but how to do it for my nervous system is a completely different question. So the book, in a way, is an expression of things I've found and learned, which basically go from ordinary experiences like active listening to enlightened mind. You know, there's a transition where you move from, you know, what do we all know? What does someone who practices a great deal know? What are their skills? And what is someone who's a great master? What is it like when they have it down? And those themes can be traced, are different in each of the 10 sephira. So I try to, you know, you can start with any of those 10, which are domains of life experience. You start with the ordinary things you're familiar with, and you can transition at your own rate to take a look at what is really being offered on a high level.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how to work with the material in the book, especially with the sephiroth on the tree of life. You know, it was, you know, one of the questions was, do you go like step by step? But I didn't think that was right. And I wasn't also sure if it was that you had to work on all of them all at once. That seemed like a lot, or do you just pick one and start there?
Well, generally, you'd start with Melkuth, the one closest to our physical world,
Right.
and which is our physical world, the kingdom. And then you go to Yasod, which is your inner self, your dream self, your what you do at night, your subconscious, you know, your shadow. You work through that, and then you would go to over to the everything they try to teach you in school, developing a sharp, analytical, penetrating, comprehensive way of thinking, so that you're objective. And I love it. I had a debate coach in high school. She said, you need to learn to argue both sides of a position with equal motivation and passion. And then you can begin to see what's going on. You know, so I listen to news anchors. They can't do that. They only know one side. Once in a while, a guy will try to present the other side in a fair way. Great difficulty, and his heart's not in it. So so then you'd go to Netzach, which is Venus, relates to Venus, and the mystery there is, you know, it's incredibly erotic, attractive, obsessive, compulsive. You know, there's incredible desires involved in the XY, XX genes interacting with each other. But there's an inner side to all that. And that's the feeling of being one with another person. So if you can attain oneness with another, you feel that within yourself, you're in a different world. All your psychic makeup reorients and recalibrates. So, and then you go on to the others, which generally, as you move upward, they become more general and universal. So you start out physical world survival, personality, and then into what really inspires you, how do you master yourself, what's your role in society, and then up into the higher kind of divine level states of awareness.
Okay. Yeah. One of the things that caught my attention when I was reading the book was when you were writing about Yesod, and you list the virtues and the vices and what's the phrase, the negative. And when I was reading Yesod, a lot of the vices, I thought, oh my goodness, those are things that I have struggled with more so than I think many of the other vices in any of the other Sephiroth. And that's why I was curious if one approach could be to, like read what you've got, read, all the 10 Sephiroth. And if there was one that really jumped out at you, to maybe start there. I understand with starting with Malkuth, because that is, the kingdom, that's the, the world we live in. But it also seems to me that it could be possible that there could be something really active in one of these in one's life, and maybe that ought to be a place to begin.
Yeah, for sure. I had explained this in detail to my editor, who wasn't going to let me get away with it. I had to say some vices for some people are virtues. Yeah. And later in life, they look a bit like, you're madly in love with someone and it's very romantic and enchanting and fulfilling. That may seem like a virtue, passionate commitment to another person, which creates a whole host of life possibilities. But later on, you may look back and say, that was an absolute mistake. How could I have been so crazy and foolish? So the same device, it's appeared as a virtue, turned into a vice. And then later, you may say, I couldn't have understood it had I not gone through it. So you need the negative or the vice in order to even learn how to identify the virtue. So that's just an understanding of life. You can say, I had these really great experiences in life, but they are defined and shaped in part by the bad things that have happened to you. They go together. So if you can see them both at the same time with clarity, you kind of arrive at an equilibrium or a state of wisdom.
Yeah.
Self-acceptance.
And is that the ultimate goal of this work, to achieve wisdom and self-acceptance? Is the goal enlightenment? What's the goal?
Yeah, someone asked me about that. Ellie Swan said, what is the goal of magic? And I said, it's at the final end of magic is a perfected imagination. Mm. You imagine something and you automatically set in place the causes and synchronicity and the relationships, the energies and the insight needed to have it manifest. You can see where it manifests, under what conditions, how to compensate for it, and how to fill in for the negative things that may happen if you make something happen which wasn't part of your normal life schedule. So that perfected imagination of a saint, Barton says that some people, the light around them is so bright that when they concentrate on something, it immediately occurs. So if I think about something, my mind has a direct connection to all the parties involved in fulfilling, if it's in the form of a request or something you want to manifest it. So that would be one way of putting it. Other ways would be like I said at the beginning, it's his goal, Barton's goal is to take a person, train him, and make him into a spirit who can oversee some part, economics, justice, literature, music, some part of human evolution. So they're there inspiring people. For him, he's got these 360 spirits around the earth he describes, and each one for 4 minutes each day is radiating its aura through the entire planet. Well, that's a novel idea. We can all learn to do that. Sit down and meditate and connect to others.
Yeah, I like the idea that it's not just a personal goal, but that it's a collective goal in many ways of helping the evolution of human consciousness.
Yeah, you want me to speak on that?
Yeah, sure.
The earth itself, Jung has these collective archetypes. Mm-hmm. For me, the archetypes of earth, air, fire, and water, which are really useful for describing exoplanets, and planets like the Earth, they're in conflict with each other. So we have one of the primary problems on Earth is we have this autonomous archetype of fire. It doesn't have any relationship to feeling or to intellect or to what we want to produce and make in the future. It just wants more power. So when anyone takes a political position or a CEO or whatever on Earth, they're touched by this. They have to fight with it. And it just says, whatever you have, you need more. Take it in any way you can get it. So that takes possession of people. So it seems like a dictator is talking rationally, and he's viewing things from a historical perspective, and he's reasonable, he wants to negotiate, but there's no human being there. He is possessed by this archetype, which wants only more power. So to restore the dictator to having a human being, having his human soul back, you have to take away his power. So when Saddam Hussein was in jail, he started making friends with people. He would say to his chief interrogator, "You're my best friend. I feel closer to you than to my own children." You see, he no longer could go out and kill thousands of people at will. He was back in a personal space, and he had his personal feelings back because there was no opportunity to control anybody and destroy it. So that's the archetype of fire. How do you overcome that? That's part of my life work.
Yeah. Well, how, and I don't know if you can answer this question, but how does someone become possessed of these archetypes, like fire and this quest for power?
Okay, so for me, if you look at Kundalini, the Shakti, as it moves up through the spine or the chakras, it goes to unite with Shiva in the crown center. There's this incredible bliss, yin-yang, you know, masculine, feminine, everything feminine in the universe, everything masculine in the universe. They're perfectly one with each other without exception. What happens if Kundalini gets distracted? She's working through that second chakra, and wham, she can't get higher. She goes crazy. It's a blind serpentine primordial power. It just wants to devour. So it'll turn someone into a sexual sadist or obsessed. And if it gets to the third chakra, it's just after power. So you get a person who, like, you know, a lot of these serial killers, you know, the police interview them, they seem completely relaxed, friendly, they joke, they're natural, but in their house, they have 10 or 20 bodies they've been cannibalizing. You know, how do you put that together? Well, that's perfectly normal for the Kundalini. It takes over the mind, and it says, I'm going to use this mind to communicate with other people and to solve problems. It takes over their soul. It says, I'm going to be empathic and feel what other people feel. It takes over their body, their resources. Like Madoff says, I've got the best investment system in the world. Come give me your billions. You know, how could a guy who's so incredibly qualified as Bernie Madoff run a Ponzi scheme where he's got like $39 billion of other people's money using it in a pyramid, you know, distribution system? Well, Bernie's gone. There's something else that has taken over, and he can't get it back. He can't say to himself, I'm an honest, ethical guy. I want to do the best for other people. Everyone believes that about me, except it's not true, and I can't change it. See, that's the Kundalini and Bernie Madoff having taken complete possession of his personality. So he's pursuing a very blind, but power increasing end. Does that mean, you see this in psychology a lot with people who are, I would use the word possessed, maybe that they are just being controlled by a blind urge or instinct from within.
So you've got the four elements, and my understanding there's a fifth, but before we discuss those, I wanted to ask, is it only fire that can be dangerous in terms of possessing someone, or can the other elements also, do they also have their dark side, as it
were?
Well,
I was talking about that in terms of, Barton wants you to, each individual calls it a soul mirror. You know, let's list all, he means what he said, list all your negative qualities, passive qualities, and list all your positive ones equally in your, where you're active, creative, you know. And now let's take what's negative or passive and make it positive or strong. Take what's weak, make it strong, negative, make it positive. So he's working with the individual. And as you said, you read through these things, some of them jump out at you like, my gosh, like I have Venus retrograde in Capricorn or Mars retrograde opposite Pluto. That's a life problem for me. That jumps out like, ah! So you can also look at the soul mirrors of the planet itself, not just the human race, but kind of might say global unconscious. And it's in that global unconscious that this autonomous fire element exists. In the individual, it's completely up to, you know, the individual personality, his biography, his social circumstances, as to what's important or not. Yijing's always saying, you're a man of great quality and nobility, but this is not the time to show it. Hide it. So the personality can be at odds with the environment, or it can say, you know, you feel very weak and uncertain, but your great opportunity once in a lifetime is now before you. Seize it. Put aside your personality and put everything you have into seizing what's outside yourself. So the I Ching tries to balance that inner and outer within the individual. The collective, that archetype of fire, is different. And each element obviously has its negative and positive aspects. I'm very weak in water, and as is for me, the human race. And so that's, I've been working at that for 20 years, 90% of my time. But slowly, Barton says it takes superhuman patience to change some of these things. You never go to astrologer and they say, you're too Aquarian, I want to see more Leo. Get out there and form a group and show me some leadership. You don't get that. You know, that's Bardon. Yes, yes. Get all the 12 signs.
Well, you know, one of the things that came to mind when you were just speaking is that it's a little bit ironic that humanity, you know, you said that our weak side here was water, but yet this is a water planet. 70% of the planet is water, but yet the oceans are so unknown. We know probably more about some aspects of outer space than what we do the watery home, the depths of our home. And that seems to have an archetypal significance here.
The part of my study of the watermelon, I published a book about 10 years ago on mermaids, undine. And you have to kind of reread it six times when you're getting it ready for publication. And I noticed that two of the mermaid queens I had spoken with, they said, you're going to meet women, human women, who actually have mermaid souls, so that you can better understand our race. And, you know, that doesn't mean anything to me. But so I thought, well, that's what they said. Let's go for it. So I got a modeling website, Model Mayhem or whatever, and I put out a global casting call. And I said, if you're a female model and you think you can represent a mermaid, how it acts, feels, talks on a beach, then I'll fly you to Hawaii. And right away, within 2 weeks, I got this girl from Australia. I flew her out, spent 6 days doing six photo shoots with her, and interviewed, did probably 20 hours of videotaped interview, her life, her biography, her personality, and so forth. And that was the beginning. And then I had some articles on internet. One was Traits of Mermaid Women. And it used to be, if you put in Google Mermaid Woman and hit enter, that would be the third essay to come up. It was that way for about 2 years before the algorithm decided to put me down there with 200, level 200, you know. So I would get women emailing me about once a month, and they say, it's like you're inside my head. You know me better than I know myself. I've always thought of some of these things you've written about, but you actually say it better than me. So I organized two get-togethers on the North Shore of Oahu, where I flew together six women each time from different parts of the world. They had never met anyone like themselves, but they had a mermaid profile. Namely, you just ask them, you know, how do you feel about the ocean? They say, when I'm in the ocean, I'm in the arms of my mother. I feel I'm one with the ocean. I'm immersed in love. Now, I don't get that from other people, but some people will say that specifically. And so they're extremely empathic, and they occasionally have all sorts of crazy psychic abilities. Like Serena, she was a champion surfer, professional, but she had occasionally, she just spontaneously could see the future. You know, so I experienced that with her. It's like, wow. And her friends say, don't do that. We don't want to know anything about the future. So they can be like that. Rhonda relives other people's memories as if she's experiencing it right now. So in 3 minutes, she can relive 3 hours of another person's life. And she hasn't done that with me, but she's solved crimes doing that. She finds lost people, you know. So I've enjoyed that, but all the same, their astral being, their power is in their connection to the mermaid realm. I'm here in this world. It doesn't, in their world, love is everywhere, and that's the only thing that exists. In my world, you try to touch that, driving your car down the freeway, and you're dead. You got to always be aware of survival. So I've had to modify water so it works for a male Homo sapien body, which is dense. I need a denser water. It's more healing. I'm more conscious of being directly connected to water and nature. And they don't do that. So I've had to learn from them, but I had to go beyond it and say, how do I make this work for me?
So are they like the embodiment of a archetype then? Is that the way to think about it?
Well, in his initiation into hermetics, in the last two chapters, Bardon says there's four elemental realms, earth, air, fire, and water, sylph, gnomes, salamanders, and mermaids. Go into each one by one and make them your homes. So you know everything you can learn. So when I was doing this, I noticed, oh, salamanders, we already have people who create dynamite and atomic bombs. We have Oppenheimer. He's like, and air. We already have Beethoven and Shakespeare, people who are great artistic sensitivity, and yet they're detached. And earth, we already have the DNA molecule. We have Warren Buffett, you know, it says, do what you love, be with people you love. It doesn't get better than that. That's a gnome mentality. It doesn't matter, just do what you love. You know, but when I hit the mermaids, it's like, I don't know anybody like this. There's nothing in literature, religion, that even faintly reflects what they're like. So they're actual beings for me. They're spirits on the astral plane, mermaid, and they can incarnate. They can do a lot of things. Besides human being, they do other things too. But that's one of the things they do. But they have to usually hide themselves because people will try to possess them or attack them or kill them. And one woman said, you can't publish any pictures of my modeling. I go back home, they'll kill me. They think I'm a mermaid. In her country, they kill mermaids. So it's subtle. But only in the last 10 or 15 years do you see blogs and YouTube videos or say, I'm this is the Mermaid Chronicles. Here's my experiences this last week. Or here's me singing, you know. And so it's a kind of invasion of our realm, but in a good way by the astral plane. But if you put a mermaid woman in front of Freud or Jung, they would just say she's very vivacious. But they wouldn't notice what I'm noticing. Because I'm reading, one girl said, how do you know I'm a mermaid? She's the oldest. She'd given up on ever meeting, having anyone. I held my hand up and I said, you have just the one element of water in your orb. And she wrote me back and said, that confirms it. This is the first time in my life anyone's ever seen who I am. So they have a high learning curve. One's a jet pilot, you know, but they have a predominance focus on. And but she said, even the jet pilot said, what you're saying about empathy is worse for me. I wake up in the morning, I feel I could be any one of my friends waking up. There's just no disconnect between me and the other people around me. So they have that very high level of empathy.
All right. And so these kind of astral beings, if we will, can incarnate into the world according to this system. And the purpose of that is to help the evolution of human consciousness.
My editor and his wife were at my first meeting on the North Shore. And they said, well, what is Rachel's purpose? Because she had a very suspicious occupation. And I said, Rachel, what's your purpose in life? She said, I do not have a purpose. I just go with the flow. But actually, they try to fit in. They don't need men to feel fulfilled. They need men like Joe Black and Meet Joe Black to show them around, define goals, and set in priorities. They haven't the faintest idea how society works. There's no manual when they wake up when they're born as a baby next to the crib that says, you're a mermaid. Here's how to survive in the human world. If they had that, they wouldn't get the full human experience. The human experience is, you know, you jump in and you haven't a clue. You just take your signs and learn whatever you can. It's just that they call these star seeds too. People from other solar systems do the same thing. They incarnate, they haven't the faintest clue. This planet is unlike anything they could ever imagine because we have a subconscious. They're monolithic. They're all the same. They all feel the same thing. Same thoughts. We're warlike. They're peaceful for millions of years. Thank you. But it's the most exciting planet because you never know what's going to happen next. There's like infinite possibilities staring us right now in the face in terms of our destiny. We have to make some heavy decisions.
Yes, we do. And that, I think, leads to kind of where I wanted to get the conversation is in regards to magic. At one point, you wrote that magic is a study of how to make the best choices in life. And it seems like that's what we have to do, not just individually, but collectively. And you mentioned a couple times in the book, and you kind of end on this note to, in some way, is that, you know, our job is also to become our own creation.
I'm sorry, say they get the last sentence again.
That our job is to become our own creation.
Yeah, there's a story in my little book, Stories of Magic and Enchantment. This angel appears before God, the creator. And he says, look, I'm united to every being that loves throughout the universe. I'm united to a kingdom of light that's everywhere. You know, I feel what other people feel. I'm creative. I can create by speaking. Why on earth do you want me to go incarnate as a human being on that desolate planet? You know, he says, I have a great imagination, but I cannot imagine the isolation I will have to go through if I put aside all my divine abilities. And God, the creator, says, it's the only way I can display the glory of the universe. And so he says, well, what if I become lost? He says, well, look at what I have built into each of your five senses. Wonder surrounds you everywhere. All you need to be is receptive. And so the angel summarizes, says, okay, you're saying, he says, I've got it. I'm to become my own creator. And the creator says, what you have just said cannot be stated more clearly. Now be off and good luck to you.
Yeah.
So he's to incarnate until he can reappear before God, and right as he's doing then. But he'll have created his divine gifts rather than having them given to him as an angel. So
yeah.
in Yasad, that deals with the subconscious, there's the exercise of, you know, you just realize feelings are like art. You can create them and dissolve them at will. Now, Tony Robbins really works at that. Robbins had millions of people. He's a lot of experience, and he's really good. Some of these exercises are just magic. So he says, you know, go back and imagine three times when you were at your very best and hold those in front of your mind right now and relive those feelings, enter them again. Do that when you get out of bed each morning. It'll give you a completely different view. You need that coaching, that inspiration, if you're going to accomplish your goals in life.
Yeah.
So in a way, if you can say we can take our negative feelings, reframe them so that we're in charge rather than victims, take our positive feelings, integrate them, unite them, take the most inspiring things we've experienced, bring them together, let them fuse together into a kind of oneness, and then live that experience. So that's your energy you need to recreate yourself into who you want to be. You need that active ability to change feelings and to access inspiration. So you become your own creator. Now, that's a big concept. It goes contrary to a lot of religion. Says this is what you got to do. This and only this. Don't do it. The head of a druid or got upset with me because we were on Iona, and I went and I visited this Buddhist Lama down the road, and he didn't want a mixed system that loses your energy. So religions have that power, which is you get everyone to think the same thoughts, feel the same feelings, do the same things, and you build a tremendous group energy. But if you mix it a little bit with some other group, they're doing the same thing, but with different feelings and thoughts and actions, then they short each other out. So I'm after a universal system where, you know, you can sit there and meditate. And you feel you're connected to other people on your own level around the world. I like that. That's more universal for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think there are a couple of really important points in there. And one is that, you know, we're not victims. And it seems to me that this system requires a lot of self-examination and honesty, radical honesty about things. The example that I will use that I think maybe applies here, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a personal example from my life. I have had a very difficult time finding a full-time job. I've been 9 years, I've been looking for decent work. And I remember about a year ago or so, once again, I was turned down for a position. And a friend of mine was like, you know, oh, I'm so sorry and everything. And my response was, you know what? I don't want that. I don't want that anymore. Because it felt to me that there was something that I was creating something to, I was like allowing myself to fall into that victim mentality and get that sort of feeling response from friends. And I'm like, that's not what I want. And took that to say, okay, now I'm going to try to create something new. Is that a good, a decent example of kind of taking the responsibility and also being aware of the emotions? Because there's a difference between feeling like, oh, this is it, you know, another one, another failure, versus that imagining, you know, all your friends celebrating for you, that you've actually accomplished what you wanted.
Yeah, in under Hode, that Sephora 8, I have a little checklist for the new age concept of, you know, imagine what you want as if it's real right now.
Right.
And a lot of spirits I connect to, they use that because they can sense it gathering the energy and the experience needed and how you need to remodify it as you learn new things. So it happens. So for them, that's a very real kind. For human beings on the astral plane, you can imagine anything and it's real to you. You know, it's like I say, a little known secret of spirits is that if you visualize something as real, they have to accept it as real.
Also,
when you come to the physical world, it takes a lot of work to get anything to happen.
Don't you also have to be kind of specific and know what you want?
So I have some, I'm lately writing screenplays, and International Screen Guild Association, Screenplayer Association, they can put me in touch with five directors or producers every single day, five new ones. They got hundreds of them. And I get feedback from them for a small fee. And we're basically working together to try to shape my two-page pitch so it will sell and it's overpowering. So that when they read it, it's like, wow, we got to make this into a movie. And so I've got no wows yet. We need it. But a lot of them say, well, if you're going to do if you're going to explain what you're doing, shape it in this format. Or someone else will say, you have some unanswered questions here. So in a way, I'm working in a really close association with partners, any number of partners, and some are really mean. but I say, oh, that's great. Finally, I'm getting some honest feedback.
Yeah.
I can see what they want, you know. So it's got to be simple, clear, and right to the point and move along. You know, I can't get off on subplots and all this other stuff. So I like that. I'm working with a spirit 10 degrees Pisces in Bardone's Earth Zone. And Bardone, I love his answer. This is one of the five spirits who it'll try to fulfill your every wish or request, has great enthusiasm for you if it's within your karma. So it's like, well, I have some projects, not for me, but for the sake of the project. I'm going to need a lot of money somewhere down the road. Let's see. So I'm very carefully writing out a journal of every time I interact with the spirit and what its feedback is to see how well we move along. Because there's a huge difficulty between the physical world and that Akashic plane where they exist. So the other thing is that I myself have a lot of trouble visualizing what I want in certain areas. And then when I can do it, it's like, okay, I still don't believe it.
Yeah.
My subconscious has a lot of resistance. It says, well, you've tried this 20 times before. And I've learned that it's kind of like my wife. She's copy edited so many books. We just gave up. I use professional copy editors now. I don't want to waste her time. You know, so my subconscious is like that. You know, you have to do a lot of thinking, saying to me, you know, about what you want, get it exactly the way you want it, walk inside of it as if it's your lucid dream, and now believe it. So it's that last act. I believe it's real now, in this moment. That's where my subconscious, we're like the producers and editors, they're sitting there saying, come on, you can do it. Just revise it once more. So I like that idea. Just work until you get it.
Yeah, I guess the question that I was getting at is, because when you were talking about, or write, excuse me, writing about Bina and Saturn, you wrote that you have to envision exactly what you wish to become, what you wish to become real, as if it is already real right now in every way, which is what you were just saying. And I guess I was wondering, for anyone who wants to do this, would they, so for example, you know, I'm putting all my energies into my podcast and other things, but let's say I was still, you know, dying to get a job. Would I imagine a specific job, or would I just imagine a vague kind of job, if that makes sense? Because, you know, you wrote again, exactly what you wish to become real.
In Silva Mind Control, Silva has this really cute, simple exercise. It's like, imagine that you're in a theater and there's just a white screen. Visualize your situation, what you don't like about it. Now move the screen to the left. Sometimes they go right, but move it to the left. Visualize the second screen. Now you have the problem solved. You have everything you want. And they said, now move that to the left. Visualize the third screen. On this screen, visualize you're in a place in the future where that whole issue of problem and solution no longer even exists. You're focused on other things that you that would come afterwards that you'd like more. So I like that idea. Sometimes it works for people. This is what I want exactly. Mm-hmm. And so when I imagine the future, I imagine there's actually a kind of building and I'm in it and we're very quiet, but we talk to each other. Everyone there is highly professional.
Yeah.
So on the other hand, when I'm meditating with Syria, this earth zone spirit, it's like it's I'm imagining right now I'm in that state of mind, but I have the energy. It's not just visualizing and thinking the thoughts. It's the feeling of this energy is magical. And I'm surrounded by enough energy to make it happen. Or some of the lunar spirits like to say, you know, on your planet, it's all about manifesting things. So it's real. And they say in the moon, you imagine a dream is real, you get more for your money faster. So if you have a dream that's inside you, people sense it and they want to be a part of it because it's so real. If it's that real to you and you love it, they're going to say, well, I want a piece of that action. So that's the lunar approach, is that you enter, live the dream.
Okay.
And the bad guys on Earth, the dictators, they live the dream every moment of the day. So they're way ahead of the good people.
Yeah. So are they good magicians?
Let me say it again.
Are they good magicians? Is that what you're saying? Or
they're using magic in a you can use magic in a negative way or positive way, like a knife, you know, or atomic bomb, blow up the meteor coming towards Earth, or you know, blow up a city. You know, it's the same destructive power used in different ways. So yeah, they're using it. It's not that it's again, it's like what was once a vice, later on you see as a virtue, or what was once a virtue. These guys would be great as admirals in the Roman Empire. You go out and you destroy and annihilate the pirate fleet. You need an admiral who's 100% in charge, but you put him in the 20th century in a little country where they can develop nuclear weapons and kill millions, hundreds of millions of people. That's not good. That should never be allowed to happen.
Yeah.
My point of view.
Well, yeah, from my point of view as well, that should never be allowed to happen. Yeah, that's not of the good. No, one of the things that I also wanted to ask you about, you, since we're talking about magic, you also noted to beware the side effects of magic. And I'm curious, what would be some of the side effects of magic?
I did. I had a friend. He could actually contact spirits really easily. He called up a Venus, which is in the book, called up a Venus spirit and said, Spirit said, what do you want? He says, I want to learn about love. And the spirit said, sure. So the next week, he falls madly in love with a girl he already knew. They have a wild, crazy, passionate relationship. And then he calls the spirit back up and says, okay, that's enough. I can't handle that. That's more than what my personality can endure. Could you call it off? So then he married a really nice, sweet girl. So I did that one time. I said, you know, can you give me some loving women, loving woman? And it just brought to me really positive women, but also incredibly negative women. Because the negative women can give more of their time and attention to you than a healthy, positive woman, because she has other things going on in her life. The negative, so it's hard to, You have to discern. You can't tell. I couldn't tell in advance which was positive, negative. Later on, I said, I don't want any of that, but I would never have gotten to that point had I not had the experience. So I contacted an investing spirit. And these spirits are crazy. They said, you can make 100%, 500% in 1 year. But unless you really understand, it's easy to assume that what you're doing is what they plan for you, when you're just confusing fantasy with telepathic communication, which always has a level of difficulty in telepathy, So it's easy to lose money as well. So yeah. I'm more the make 4% a year with 95% certainty than make 500% and risk losing 50% or all of it in 12 months. I've grown conservative.
Yeah. So be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
So there are side effects. You're presented with new things you wouldn't normally encounter at this stage of your life.
Right. Now I appreciate the focus on the imagination, because I think imagination is something that is not really welcomed that much in our culture. We say we like imagination, but we don't really like imagination. I appreciate the focus on imagination, but I'm also curious because there's also, it seems, this requirement to be focused and aware on our lives. At one point, you asked the question, can you seek to be fully alive in every moment while also being aware of life as if you have already died and are looking back at it from the other side? Now, that last bit is something else, but it was that idea of being fully alive in the moment seems to me to be present in the moment. And if you're present in the moment, you can't necessarily be focused on the imagination. Is that right? Or am I missing an important element here?
Well, it's called multidimensional awareness. You're here in this world, and then you take a break and you're in another world.
Okay.
I'm writing the biography of a girl. Each night she lucid dreams. She's highly adept at lucid dreaming. But every night she lucid dreams that she's a starship captain for the Pleiadian race, which is a million years ago became enlightened. And she has great details about how to make a starship and all the races she visited. So then she's also talking to me. So if I talk to her and I say, can I talk to Illyria? And boom, the Ellie is gone and I'm with the starship captain. I say, can we meditate on water? I'm not meditating on water with Ellie. I'm meditating on water with the starship captain. This is like the movie K-Pax. The guy thinks he's from another star system and the psychologist can't break him down. And the guy has little spooky things he does that show that he's not normal. He can see. He can see in other infrared in ways humans can, for example. So yeah, I like the moment that's more a Kether thing. I love what you read about from Baena. I reread that yesterday. I said, who can write like this? This isn't me.
Yeah.
When I'm meditating, I have to write down within 5 minutes what I experienced or it's gone. Yeah. The normal brain can't sustain it, But then when I reread it, I said, I can kind of imagine being in that place. So in Kether, it's like you have the initiation of Malkuth. You have all the initiations united as one. So you feel you're part of nature in a timeless space. You have a feeling of the inner contentment, peace, and happiness. You have a feeling of being one with another person. You put all those together and you get the sense of, I'm in the moment. There's a sense of stillness in which I'm united to everything. And there's a sense like Jesus on the cross, or no, in the night before, he says, with you, all things are possible. That's quantum reality. You're in a state, quantum state, where anything can appear, including our universe as it exists. So it's the being in the moment is a stillness where you have that inner peace of feeling connected there. Every desire is already fulfilled, satisfied, completed. And you have a sense of at the same time, anything can happen. If I respond in the right way to what's around me right now. So it's incredibly creative, willing to seize the yang, and it's incredibly feminine, receptive, feeling united at the same moment. I like that. I like the masculine, feminine, united, this moment, all that. So one of the exercises, can you do that? Can you imagine every desire satisfied, your ideals made real, your dreams fulfilled, your goals attained, your missions accomplished. If you can just imagine those things, see, that kind of is a great liberation. Because again, the subconscious feels I'm in a tunnel without light at the end. And here's the light at the end of the tunnel. So it just changes, reorients, reprograms, reboots the personality, the nervous system.
I always think of Kether as kind of pure potentiality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, the way that we began this conversation and working with this system was going from Malkuth up to Kether, but can you do the reverse? Can you begin with that pure potentiality and work your way down so that it manifests in Malkuth?
Yeah, that's when I lived in Tucson for 10 years, I used to go out and sit in the Saguaro Desert on a rock for 8 hours. Mm. And I would spend each day, a whole day, just on one sephiroth. So I started with Kether and worked down. But I never quite took enough time on the lower ones. So I later in life, I realized, I have to do my homework, you know, kind of like the college, you know, you didn't finish your requirements here. Go take summer school and come back and we'll give you your degree. Which happened to me.
Yeah, I spent way too much time in college. And yeah, that's a whole other story. So I think that, let me see where I want to, the question I want to ask here. I know that we're starting to run out of time. You know, I like that at the heart of this system, and again, I'm taking from what you wrote, is self-transformation, self-mastery, self-empowerment, and integration. And in that aspect, you said it was aligning oneself with the forces, the laws, and the harmony of the universe. Is working with these different sephira, is that how we integrate?
Right. In the Venus one, number 7, that's it. Part of the initiation is to integrate the personality without all those higher things thrown in. So I could describe someone who has that kind of integrated. They connect with you directly. They feel what you feel. They're very empathic. They're charismatic. They present themselves with great clarity. They're assertive without being imposing. They're artistic. They're sensitive. And they have that inner experience being one with another person. And I have a wrist exercise, which basically they know how to love with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's an integrated personality. You don't run into that very often. You get parts of it really strong in one person. Oh, that guy's great at art, you know, and what's his name? Spielberg. Spielberg can imagine an entire movie from beginning to end, every scene, every camera angle, every feeling, every dialogue. He has that level of imagination so that when he wants to manifest the movie, picks up the phone and says, I need, you know, $50 million, and they're shooting in 6 months. So that's the use of imagination, the integration. I gave the example of Robin's system and a Proga. They're kind of diametrically opposite. Robin's very aggressive. You know, let's get right on it. Create the inspiration. Go for your goal. Every day, make step forward. And Progoff is more, let me listen to your life. I want to know everything I can know about you and your biography. And we're going to arrive at a point where you will just naturally, spontaneously feel, I'm ready to move on to my next stage of life. So I like both approaches. One is, again, very receptive, feminine. The other is very, you know, young, aggressive. Mm-hmm. But you get your choice. How do you want to integrate yourself? What how does that work for you? It's kind of the question someone would put to them. But the integration, as you go higher, we're dealing with transpersonal stuff, Hithypirith and higher, you know, and you got to be very careful of that.
Yeah. Well, and I know that sometimes in Kabbalah, you've got the top three sephira, you know, Kether, Chokmah, and Binah. And it's often said that there's like a chasm or a gap between the, you know, between those top three, the supernals, I think is what they're called, and the lower ones. Is there something like that within the system? Is there, if we're going up this, the tree here, the tree of life, is there something that gets us from these lower seven to the top three?
Yeah. The three previous ones, the Sad, which is Jupiter, Mars, which is Gevura, and Tipperith, which is the sun. They each have exercises which kind of, if you do the exercise, you get familiar with it, you're already working higher. So in the Tipperith, you have a sense of stillness, one of the virtues. And in stillness, you, again, you feel united to all things. And as if there's no motion, it's just everything is happening right now. And I run into people like that. You know, they say, this moment now is as real as the moment from 10 years ago. Or one girl says, my memory of Atlantis is more real to me than this lifetime right now. So for them, time is flexible. It's not linear. In Hesiod, there's the idea of blessing other people. Well, that's a very Saturn idea. You know, you're going to get involved with other people and change their lives without imposing upon them. You can't mess with them, but you can sure as heck put some inspiration in and around them. And Gevura, it's like, you know, oh, it's great to practice. I'm in the dojo every day for 3 hours, you know. But that's not the same as saying I'm united with earth, air, fire, and water. The energy is unfolding the universe. So when you start doing that, your Saturn's saying, hey, you're on board. We like you. Your Saturn return is not going to be like Joe Black. So should I be afraid? And Death says to him, not a man like you.
Well, I'll tell you what, my first Saturn return was absolutely brutal, but it was necessary. And I know the second Saturn return, I've been told by various people that if you've put in the work, it's actually okay. Saturn will give you a gift. And, you know, my friend that I'm living with at the moment has commented about how much time I spend working, trying to get, you know, the podcast going and everything. And that's actually what's going on in my mind is that, no, I have to put in the work. I've got to do the work. And there will be a payoff eventually, but the work has to be done. It's not going to happen on its own. So I think I'm going to start thinking of it in terms of magic. But I know that we're almost out of time here. But one of the last questions I have for you is that you wrote that magic is not a shortcut. And with this idea of self-mastery and self-empowerment and integration, that definitely seems to be the case. But if someone wants to make changes in their lives, and it seems to me that that's why one would begin following this magical path that you set out, when can they start seeing effects? You know, because I think that a lot of people, if they hear, you know, well, magic is not a shortcut, they might respond, yeah, but I need something to happen now.
Yeah, there's a lunar spirit named Enrudu. And for Enrudu, everything you want is already surrounding you. You just need the synergy to connect to it. And he's very astral, so he knows how to connect people. But at the same time, his attitude is, well, you have something you want. One secret is you give that to other people that you want. Mm-hmm. And in giving it to other people, you learn so much about it, you become wise and you're free of the problem. Mm-hmm. So like the Alcoholic Anonymous is formed by guys saying, well, it's not just about you and me. It's about how can we help other people? And so they try to, and they learn, their learning curve goes way up. So when I say that magic's not a shortcut, for the spirits, it's just about being aware. If you're aware of what's going on in all aspects of the situation, then you can see the solution and move towards it much more quickly. Maybe what I want is part of the solution for someone else. And if I'm helping them get what they want, they're going to look at me and say, hey, I can use you. Step over here. Let's go to work. So with the spirits, I'm working with like one for the philanthropic wealth. You know, I need the wealth to fulfill some of my missions. You know, or the other one is specialized in art, movies. You know, I'm aligning myself with their interests as if I'm their teaching assistant. Because I'm saying, you help me and I'll teach other people exactly how to do what you're doing for me, because that's why you exist. And it's a hard to find. You get a student like that, they get you on the phone and say, I want to do exactly what you want to do. You know, that's harder. It's like, whoa, I don't get that. I've pulled that on a lot of masters. I say, I want your innermost teachings because that's what I need. And they look like, Oh, my other students, they just want a little tiny piece of cheese, but you want everything. Let's get to work. Yeah. So it can work, but then again, the most difficult lesson I've had is that you have to repeat it over and over with great feedback and sensitivity and experimentation until you get it. And that can take years or decades. But you just like the Warren Buffett, you never give up. You're doing what you love. Time doesn't matter. So it's that repetition I never comprehended in the beginning about magic. To make a spirit your friend, you got to meet with them weekly for years. And then they look at you, then it's like, we are friends. What do friends do? Anything, you know?
Yeah, that's, I have a ancestor altar, and that's kind of what my understanding is that you have to work with them on a regular basis, because if it's only like, once every couple months, you're a stranger. There are strangers to you. You don't have that relationship. You have to build the relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. I know that we are out of time, but let me ask you just the final questions. One is, what do you have coming up next?
I'm to present my world peace recruitment program for people who want to meditate on dictators. I'm writing screenplays and novels so that they can actually see the world I live in. And the idea is that I'll reach millions of people with a great screenplay or a movie. Whereas if I stay within occult discussion groups, I'm reaching, maybe 100 or 200. So I like that approach. And so I have novels and movies I'm trying to sell. I have absolutely no background. I kind of start out of scratch. So, but yeah, I spend 3 hours a day meditating, mostly on water. So I live stream some of this on my Facebook page, Facebook William R. Mistily.
All right, yeah, that was the final question, was where can people go to find out more about you and your
Yeah,
work?
that would be a great
All
place.
right, so the Facebook page, and could you repeat that for me again?
Yeah, Facebook, WilliamRMistily.com. No, it's Facebook.com/WilliamRMistely,
Okay.
MISTELE.
All right. I will find that, and I will put that in the show notes in the video description.
Yeah, it's like
And I'll also,
five books there you can read.
yeah, and I'll also put a link in for your most recent book here, The Hermetic Tree of Life, so people can find that really easily. Well, William, thank you so much for taking the time to
Thank you for
speak
being
with
so
me.
kind.
Oh, of course. I enjoyed the conversation, and I appreciate things that kind of push against the way I see the world, and I really try to examine it from so many different points of view. So I've been interested in Franz Barden as well. I've got an initiation into Hermetics. I've just have never read it yet. So I was really happy to get a little bit more insight into that by speaking with you. So I really enjoyed it. And again, thank you so much for your time. It's greatly
Thank you.
appreciated. All right. And that's a wrap on episode 123 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. Now, I know you must be getting tired of all of this because you know what's coming. Sign up for my Patreon, share this with friends, family members, coworkers, subscribe to the podcast, or follow it on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the grind. But here's the thing, all of that is really important. Putting this podcast together takes a lot of time and effort. Right now, it is a labor of love. I'm in the process of making some changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the front range doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, psychedelics and consciousness, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.